Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, hello. Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. This is the 140th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding, award-winning chef and restaurateur who has a fascinating new memoir, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to fake it until you make it. Believe in yourself and act as if you belong. If you don't feel confident, pretend until you gain the experience or tools you need for it to be real. Even if you don't know how to do something today, you can learn how to do it for tomorrow and the future. Nothing is impossible. Work hard and with hard work and determination, you can figure things out and make your dreams come true. That's my tip today. Now, I'm very honored and excited to have my guest here in the studio with me. It is Barbara Lynch. She is a world-renowned chef and restaurateur from South Boston who has a new memoir, Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire. Barbara is the founder and CEO of Barbara Lynch Grupo, which includes restaurants Number 9 Park, Menton, B&G Oysters, Drink, and Sportello. She has received numerous accolades, including James Beard Foundation's Best Chef Northeast in 2003 and Outstanding Restaurateur in 2014. And she was most recently named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people in the world, which is pretty damn cool. That's, so welcome. Yeah,
thanks, Sherry.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm in awe of your whole career and new book, which I read the entire thing this week, and I couldn't put it down.
Wow. Thanks. I'm in awe of your office here. I love this office.
Thank you. I did not do the decor, but I like it a lot myself. Yeah.
No, it's so fun here.
It is a lot of fun. So I like to start out my show and talk with people about their backgrounds and how they got into the industry. And from reading your book, I have some insight into that. But I'd like to, you know, start a bit in your own words of what it was like growing up in South Boston and how you found your way into kitchens and cooking.
Well, I grew up, you know, really in a humble household, as they say. My mother was widowed. She had 6 children, and then she remarried, and she had 7. So I was the last of the Lynches, and she was pretty busy. So she worked like 3 or 4 jobs, and which means I barely had discipline. Meaning she didn't check my homework and all of that jazz. So I really didn't like school, and I was, when I was growing up, I was in, during high school, it was the height of forced busing in Boston. It was in the early 70s, and so my high school was a war zone, and which brought me to Madison Park High in Roxbury, and I had a really wonderful home ec teacher who saw some talent in me that I didn't know I had. Although I did feel really comfortable cooking, it felt natural for me, actually.
Yeah. So there you found, because you were, I had read with you were a high school dropout, but you stayed with home ec. That was a part of the high school program, and you stayed with it?
Yeah, usually you're only supposed to take it for 1 year. And she convinced my guidance counselor that if I weren't able to take this class for 4 years, then I wouldn't even stay in school. So she convinced Mr. Gelati that I need to stay in cooking for 4 years, which was great. So, I mean, you know, honestly, she was like the calmest person in that school during a very chaotic time.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's great you found that. And then how did you make your way? What was the first jobs in a kitchen?
Well, I was working at the Harvest. That's like my real first professional kitchen job, en garmanger. And I was there for about 4 months, maybe 3 months. And then I met somebody who worked for Todd English. And Todd was the chef at Michaela's in Cambridge at the time. And it was like after work one night, and we met at a party, and he said, and we were talking food, and he said, "You'd be great at Michaela's, and we have an opening. Would you ever come over for an interview?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure, call me." And they called a couple of times, and I was just, you know, I guess I didn't call them back. It was way before cell phones.
Right.
And then one day I called. It was Todd English who called, and I, by accident, answered the phone. And he said, "Hey, I heard about you. You're going to come and interview." And I said, "Okay, yeah, sure, I'll come over." It took me 2.5 hours to find it in Cambridge. And, you know, it's located in this really, it was like a dead zone over there, desolate area of Cambridge, 1 Cambridge Street. So I was 2.5 hours late for my interview, and finally this tall guy, 6'4", black hair, comes, and he's like, "Barbara?" And I said, "Yes, Todd." And I looked at him, and I said, "Who the fuck would put a restaurant in this place?" And he's like, "Oh, I guess you're sassy." and then he hired me. And I never do this. I never quit a job without giving it, you know, a year or my notice, like a 2-week notice or a month notice. But that's the only time I've ever done it. And I just quit, like didn't show up for work, and I regret it. But, you know, he's convincing enough to get me to show up the next day and work.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is when I was reading the book, and this stuff about Todd and names. When names start to come up, people I know, I can having known him, visualize, and I did not know him back then. But you stayed with Todd for
8 years.
While.
8 years.
Yeah, understatement. Okay.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. He's the only chef I worked for, actually. So.
Yeah, and then you went to Italy, and there was... With Sarah Jenkins, she
worked on Garmerger next to me at Michaela's.
Okay.
So she dropped out of RISD. She was a photography major and ended up leaving because she wanted to cook. And her mom's a pretty famous cookbook author herself, mostly on Tuscan cuisine in Puglia. And her dad, which I didn't know at the time, was a Pulitzer Prize winner for politics. And do you know he's like the head guy at NPR International?
No, I didn't. I know Sarah. I know her Perchetta.
Uh-huh.
But no, I knew about her mom. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Nancy Harmon Jenkins was like, actually, she was a contributing food writer for the New York Times.
Oh, wow.
But I couldn't work half the time. I was laughing so hard at Sarah. I mean, we had a great time
in
on
Italy.
The line.
Oh, no,
first.
At work. Okay.
Yeah, and then she invited me to Italy. And of course, I was like, oh, sure. Yeah, I'll go. Not even, I was so clueless. I just, you know, I never left Southie, so I just thought everything was going to be in English. And when I got to Italy, I thought everything would, I'd be able to deal. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even find Cambridge. So what the hell was I thinking, right?
But you did, but I think the whole thing with your whole story and their whole career is like you figure things out as your mantra, as and so you figure it out. How to find Sarah in Italy.
By luck, thank God.
And it was inspiring because you then, I mean,
It was,
is that where you found a love particularly for Italian cuisine?
Yeah, what I found was, I actually did read The Foods of Italy by Waverly Root like about 20 times. So back and forth to Cambridge on the we call it the T, and you guys call it the subway, but it's about a half an hour ride. And when I finally got on the train and from Milan to Tuscany, everything started to make sense. So you're riding through the Po Valley, and you're, oh, my God, we're in Palma? Palma Prosciutto. You're in Bologna. Oh, wow, tortellini and brodo. You know, it clicked. Mm-hmm. And then I was just hooked, and I was fascinated with the culture of Italy and the culture of loving food and what your mother's making in the kitchen, and that mothers really cared for their kids and what they're eating, and it wasn't chaotic at home. And they're in the garden, and they're raising rabbits and making gnocchi, and it just seemed really happy. So I liked it.
Yeah, I did a semester in Florence when I was in college. Mm. And when people talk about Italy, I light up myself. There's something just magical about it. And
imagine a kid coming home. I wasn't a kid. I was 22, 23. But imagine when I came home from that trip, I was like, holy fuck. I felt like I went up to Mars and came back. I just felt this sense of accomplishment. Like, oh, wow, look at what I just did. And that's just hunger for more, another challenge. Bring it on, you know. And that's how I live my life, I think.
Yeah. When did you get the desire to open your own place? And did you see that coming? Was it something after?
Oh no,
Italy or no?
No, I think. So after I worked for Todd at Olives, I actually. We came up with that Figs concept for him, pizza. So it was like pizza pasta. He loves Neapolitan pizza, and I love making pizza. And so Figs came to life, and he moved Olives down to 10 City Square. And, you know, after 2 years of Figs, I had that wonderful opportunity of becoming an executive chef and really, from beginning to end, opened a restaurant. Like,
right.
From the equipment to hiring staff. Etc. Now I was bored and I wanted more. I wanted appetizer, entree, to dessert, and the whole experience. So after 8 years, I gave him my notice, and he wasn't too happy. And then I left, and then I went to Rocco's, and that was a pretty short 2 years. Then Galleria Italiana, where I started to get all my accolades, and I won the Food and Wine Award.
Right, you got Best New Chef, it was 1996, Food and Wine.
Yeah, now you're really showing my age, right?
No, but I mean...
I'm kidding.
this Food and Wine Best New Chef list today and since all these years, I mean, it says a lot. Mm. And people look for that list every year, and it's very hard to be one of those 10 chefs, so... Mm.
That's a funny story in the book. When I get off the plane and, you know, this again, there's no cell phone. I don't even have a camera. And it's like when the drivers are there and they're like, Julia Child, Patricia Wells, Marcella Hazan, and then there's Barbara Lynch. I'm like, oh, my God, I made it, you know. So anyway, after the awards and all of that, I come back and I felt ready. And there really, at that time, wasn't a chef I wanted to work for in Boston. And
you weren't going to leave Boston. You haven't left Boston.
No, I haven't left Boston. I there's no really need for me to leave Boston. I still have my friends there, and also I don't really feel comfortable going to somebody else's city to be a chef. I feel like we owe it to our community to sort of be part of our community and in our world, in my world anyway, my chef world. And there was a lot of things that were missing in Boston that I felt we needed, or at least I needed, oysters and good wine and, you know, a butcher shop that I feel like I didn't have to go to the North End to go get, you know, cuts of meat.
So your first place was number 9.
Yeah, 20 years ago now.
That's incredible.
It's still going strong, which is amazing.
I'm planning a Boston trip coming up because I haven't been in a while, and I have to go to all of your places because I feel I've just been reading about
them. You need
them.
A weekend, and I'll take you around.
I will let you know when I'm coming.
Even into but you have to take you to the Shamrock. You know, I got to take you to my.
I want to go to the dives. I would like to go to a baseball game.
I'll skip that.
Okay. No, I'd like to. I mean, I've last I drove through on the way to Maine, but it wasn't enough time.
We can hang with the Celtics players if you want.
Okay. I will.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can do that.
I may take.
I don't go to the
this.
Game. I hang with them after, but. I don't like crowds.
Yeah, I hear you, but I'm not surprised you're friends with them. Or yeah,
they like to
you
eat.
Hang.
They like to eat a lot.
Yeah.
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 They're good. They're fun.
Cool.
I'm not fans with the Sox players, but Tom Brady's a good guy, too. We can hang with them. Whatever.
When you
come, you let me know.
I'll let you know. Mm. Tom Brady went to University of Michigan, and I'm alum, so I feel a little connection there.
There you go.
All right.
All right.
And on this sports note, we're going to take a little break and then come back and talk more with Barbara. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Bob's Red Mill is a proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network and a big supporter of organic farmers. Ray and Tom Williams are two farmers who have worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in Eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray shares what their relationship with Bob's Red Mill means to them.
We thought that for over the long term, we thought it would make sense, better sense for the soil. Also, we thought that it was something that would improve the quality of the food supply. We're lucky in that we're working with Bob's Red Mill. We're part of a regional food network. With Bob is a fundamental relationship and cornerstone to that. We also work with other best-of-class people in the Northwest, and we're thankful for the long-term relationship that's brought good things to the soil and good things to our long-term farm economic plans. We appreciate his attitude toward absolutely high standard for the benefit of his customers. We take pride in meeting those standards.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Barbara Lynch, who is regarded as one of Boston's and the country's leading chefs and restaurateurs, and she has a new memoir out called Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire. So, Barbara, you have what under Barbara Lynch Grupo, 6 restaurants now?
Now 8.
8?
7 of mine, and I don't have partners, but I just signed up to work with... I opened a restaurant with Mario Batali at Eataly in Boston.
Oh, awesome.
Au Pêche.
So how do you manage all, what's a day in the life besides coming out to Bushwick? how do you manage all of your...
Oh, you know,
all of your places?
Go get my nails done and get massages. No, I don't. I don't know when the last time I... got a pedicure, but I should get one.
Summer. Summer's coming. It
means
it's a good time.
I gotta put my boots away, right? I have a wonderful group culture that we I'm 20 years in now, so I've learned some lessons along the way, but I do have a wonderful team and a great culture that we've made. But the team is great, and you know, we grow within, and if you expand, I'm saying if you grow, it actually becomes a little easier, a lot easier, actually. When I was growing, I said, how big do I have to get to the HR department? Because as a chef and growing, I would always worry about, oh, God, did I give them enough vacation time? Or, you know, can we give them insurance? And, you know, when a company's small, it's really hard to get a good rate for dental or insurance, et cetera, et cetera. So that was partly the way to get that and to get there is to grow. The hard part about growing is that you have to learn to delegate. And then the hardest part was to switch your what you do, your job. So the hardest part was to step out of the kitchen and become the businesswoman. And, you know, I'm not completely out of the kitchen yet. I'm in it. I'm in the water and all of that. And I still design the menus and I still mentor my chefs within. They work with me. But then you delegate. And you have to, you know, and you have to stick to those channels. And communication is key. And so, in a way, if I'm the CEO of the company, then I make decisions on where we're going to go next. And there could be a lot of balls in the air. And once they start to fall down, and if everything is in line and they make sense, then, yeah, we go for it. So, and then everyone gets excited, and then off we go again. And then it starts to fall into place. But I won't move, or I won't make a move until we are really running great in the Grupo with all the existing restaurants.
Sounds just smart and makes a lot of sense. I feel like I've heard some other restaurateurs who have grown that they find there's a time they also need to open another restaurant because they don't want to lose their team, and they feel like, you know, you open a new place, you give someone that position to be executive chef, you kind of keep people under your umbrella.
Yeah. That I used to think that way too, but I also feel like when dead leaves fall off a tree and new one comes, you know, you cannot create anybody else's destiny, but you can look at who you have when you're about to burst and grow. It's like you can look at what you have and say, oh God, that this person is perfect for this next job. I'm pretty lucky that we have staff who have left and weren't happy when they left and they come back.
That's, yeah, that's something.
And now we're at the point, like, if they do come back, like, I can start my own company now without investors, and then I can invest in them when they want to go, when they want to start their own restaurants.
Right.
And that's good. This is the next generation. I mean, I'm 53. I really don't want another restaurant. I don't want another brick and mortar, but I do want to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems also, well, your restaurant concepts, I was thinking, like, you covering a lot, like between having oysters, between having a drink and a which I also saw one, Tales of the Cocktail.
Oh my
best
God.
Bar.
No shit. I just saw that text last night. We're up for like best bar in the world. Best. I don't know. She got it.
Yeah. You've had so many accolades. I couldn't name them all, but it just, you have, and Menton is a little more.
Montan. Okay. Let's practice this one.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
No. Montan with an M.
Montan.
Montan with an M. So it's Montan. Yeah. Montan. Montan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Montan.
Yeah. That's all. It's easy. Like my investors were like, you can't name it Montan. No one's going to be able to pronounce it. I'm like, oh my God, you could put an au bon pan in America. I couldn't even say it when it came, so we got it.
Now that I know it rhymes with wonton, I will never mess it up again.
It is all good. Believe me, when I opened number 9, do you think I knew how to spell like French words? You know, I'm still having a problem with foie gras.
Yeah.
I didn't care.
Let me ask you the question I had from my last guest. I had on episode 139, Keith Krieger, and he's a porcelain wares designer for restaurants and chefs. He's based in Austin, Texas. He does beautiful work. So he wants to know, as you've grown as a chef, how important has learning how to mentor your team become, and what suggestions do you have for the other people who are growing a team and relying on others to help them grow their vision? Because you're an amazing mentor. Yeah.
Well, I mean, make sure they have a vision, first of all. Ask them what their vision is. What's their goal? When they're interviewing, what's their goal? What's their 5-year goal? Sometimes 10 years is too long, but I like the 10-year goal. 5 years is too short.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a notebook, and where's your vision? And then how can I set you up to succeed, right? And then, because I can't teach you passion, but I can teach you everything else. But I can't teach you, and I'd rather you don't come from another restaurant, because it's going to take me a while to get rid of shitty management styles or, you know, kitchen styles that you've been through. And then to mentor is to be a great listener and to follow up. If you've given them advice, I'd like to follow up or make them follow up with you to see how they're doing. Like, I follow up with chefs who have gone and left me and went to another city and so forth. And I make sure that I'm always available via email or phone. Out of my 300 employees, 380 or 400, they all have my cell phone number. To feel like if they're not being heard, because that's the biggest problem I had, not being heard, was a huge trigger for me. Everyone has to have that opportunity to be heard and be listened to. And then let's talk about this with, you know, a senior team. Because there's room for everyone. And, when you hire somebody, it might not be the right position for them. And a lot of times, people are afraid to show their true humbleness and their true heart. I find this with chefs, right brain, left brain.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I have a lot of people who dropped out of Harvard, and they're really good at organizing and mechanical skills and so forth, but they suck sometimes at cooking because they're petrified to really show what comes out of their heart on a plate. And that is the hardest part of my job, to show them.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. It's something that's embedded in them. So really, take some time, and that's mentoring. Take some time and really work with them, because they're great people. Like, if they came to you in your company, there's a reason why they came to you in your company, because they want to be there. So take the time with them.
That's great advice. In writing your memoir, what was the hardest part about that? Or what? Did it just flow?
I didn't think about the... I didn't think about the future and the book tour and then talking about it all. This is the hard part. I just felt like it was just another journal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have so many journals that I've kept since... literally since I was 5, 6, that I felt like, and they're never finished, right? So I felt like I was just finishing all the unfinished journals, and I never thought about what it would be like to be on tour, because I never really looked that far.
Right.
But now I can tell you it's been hard talking about myself this long for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, actually 5 weeks now. It's tough.
Yeah, well, I think you're doing amazing, and I appreciate it. And I think it's a part of it. But I think that now your story's out there, and people can read it. And I think you know, finding out more through these interviews is a good thing. So
I think the funny thing is that my colleagues who really think they know me, the tough, badass. I get all these things they call me, Queen Bee of Boston, the Queen Bee of, like, the Philly boys call me Queen Bee. Quinnells
of Steel.
Quinnells of Steel, badass. I don't know, you know. And I'm really a softy. I could cry on commercials, you know. I'm such a mush ball, really.
Do you think it's up until now, up until this book, really, that people are now seeing
the real me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a mom, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but yes, I am. You know, I'm a humble person. I am.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, I think I don't think you have to be one thing, but I think you came across your career as
tough. Right.
And people are seeing your softer or more human. Or I don't know, not more human, but
I
a
think
different
my,
side.
The walls I had to break down were extremely thick and heavy slate. It wasn't like that cheap concrete, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, awesome.
Thanks.
We're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to play my speed round game and talk some industry news.
I like speed round.
Oh, I think Woo-hoo! You're going to be good at it.
Oh,
so,
God.
Stick around. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks.
Hey,
Like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter. So tell your mama you've been spreading honey, won't you? Tell your brother you've been spreading honey, won't you? Tell your sister you've been spreading honey, won't they come along and spread some honey? Okay, we are back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bear. My guest today is Barbara Lynch, and it is time for my speed round game. So what this is I'm going to name a few things, and you pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Oh, awesome.
Okay. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
In.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine, baby. On ice.
I saw a book cover.
Right.
Wine on ice.
I don't know. Kind of like, I think maybe you can drink a little more. I don't know. I love wine on ice.
Red and white?
Rosé on ice.
Rosé on ice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I'm not having dinner, but if I'm having fabulous dinner, then I love a great wine pairing to go with it. Okay. But while writing a book, wine on ice.
Awesome. Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Large.
Communal.
Capital L.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Neither.
Interesting. Okay. So I think someone else in the past has said that either. I'm a chef's counter person. But
I'm a bar person, but not a chef's counter.
Okay. I think it was someone else who works in a kitchen that also wanted to be away from the chef's counter.
I get too stressed out. I can't watch it. If there's a screamer chef and they're opening the doors and then they're opening quart containers, I'm like, oh, my God. If it was fucking Karm Kitchen and was like ballet, no problem. But otherwise, I'm like, I got to get out of here.
Okay. I get it.
Okay.
Okay. A few more. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
You know, I like tipping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. They work so hard.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I hope they're doing okay. I mean, I haven't had time to think about the calculations, but I hope it's good.
Yeah. How about olives or figs?
Wow.
However you want to define them.
I'm going to say figs, because I'm growing a bunch.
Mary Poppins or Peter Pan?
Poppins, baby.
Got to read the book to understand that joke.
Don't try it at home.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Boston?
Come on, man. I am the two B's, all right? Boston and Brooklyn. I'm starting to get used to it over here.
Oh,
starting
okay.
to know the subway system. Look out.
Look
I might
out.
Have to come over here more.
Okay. Well, I'll take you
down.
Out then.
I get this down. I know how to get the L train to Brooklyn. This is good.
Yeah, it's another B, Bushwick. Yeah,
I'm going to have to buy my pass now, that
okay.
little ticket thing. Yeah.
We would love to see more of you here.
You guys should do the books on the T. Like, we do books on the T.
I don't know what
you
that is.
You hide your book on the T, and people read it, and then they return it. And then another person grabs the book. I don't know if they'll return it.
I'm like, that would never work.
Oh, that's too bad.
I mean, maybe I need to be more optimistic, but
we'll do books at Roberta's.
Okay, that I think
that,
would work.
That would work.
That would work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll give that a whirl.
Okay, let's talk some industry news. So last week were the James Beard Awards in Chicago. There was an article on Eater about it, and I was there. I go a lot to the Beard Awards and been there for the Chicago ones. This was their third year there. And it was lovely and a lot of amazing. It was just an amazing evening and tons of amazing people won. A few highlights. So best new restaurant went to Le Coucou. My French speaking friend said it's Le Coucou.
Le Coucou.
Le Coucou.
I'm dying to go. I just haven't been yet.
It's I know it's really hard to get in. Not saying I think you could get in, but lunch. I went for lunch recently.
Mm-hmm.
Go for lunch. You can get in, and it's the same amazing food and service.
Yeah. I'm dying.
And ambiance.
Great.
So, yeah.
Congratulations. I mean, that's great. It's great.
No, yeah.
Everyone's talking about it. Every chef, anyways.
Yeah, no, it was a big opening here in New York, and congratulations to all of the winners. I'm planning to do I did some interviews. I was in the press room, and I interviewed people like outstanding pastry chef Gaia Olvera from Danielle, who won. And the guys from Canlis who won. Wine program. And so I did some interviews. I'm going to do a show in a couple of weeks about this. But I wanted to see, because you are a multiple winner nominee, like what was your experience like and being a nominee and then winning, the impact? I mean, what does this have on people's careers?
I mean, I think it has a huge impact on the career. I was happy not to win for the first, I kind of like not winning once you're nominated and you win for the first time. I mean, it's kind of like I liked being nominated a couple of years in a row and then you finally win.
Right.
Just because I felt like I wasn't ready to win it. But I was happy when I won it. More for my team than for me. You get to party one night and then the next day it's back to business.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty awesome to be with your colleagues and celebrating, we're on the same page kind of thing. And that's great. And it's fabulous. And then to see, the next crew coming up and the next generation to be James Beard Award winners. It's a big family. It's a great family to be in.
I feel that even just as someone, a part of the industry, attending and covering the event, that's why I like going.
Right. It's like, it's a great network. It's a great honor to be honored even. If you don't win, it's just an honor to be honored anyway. And kudos to all. Yeah. I think it's fabulous.
Yes, I agree.
I'm sure lucky.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I agree. Fabulous. Mm. And another awards thing that came out this week was Food & Wine Magazine's list of their 10 best restaurants of 2017. And this, again, Le Cucu was on it again. Tartine Manufactory in San Francisco. There was Royster in Chicago. The one I really wanted to point out was Waypoint in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is Michael Scalfo's new place.
Scalfo. I haven't been yet.
I was at Worlds of Flavor conference in Napa a few weeks ago, and I moderated a panel on social media, and he was one of my panelists. Uh-huh. And so I met him, and so I haven't been, but I was just super excited to see him on this list.
Oh, cool. Any women on the list?
I'm not familiar with all of these, but like, there's a place, June's All Day, from Austin. I don't know who's there. It's a good question.
Yeah. And I just
Tartine Manufactory.
Yeah,
is
a husband-wife. Yeah, they're awesome.
So,
yeah,
it's. I mean, and this, you were on this list too, number 9 from years ago.
Yeah, for Best Sommelier, Kat. We've been working together for 32 years, Kat.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's great. She's amazing. And I read in the paper today about the Hudson Yard project.
That is huge, and there are so many awesome chefs and restaurateurs going in there with Thomas Keller and Jose Andres, and they said David Chang was doing one.
No women.
No women.
No. But that's okay.
I don't think they're done, though. They have two more spots left. All right. If you're listening to the show, get two women restaurateurs in there. I think they should.
I'm not stirring anything up, but just, I don't know. I've just been asked that woman question.
Yeah. Well, and the James Beard Awards, I don't know. Like, well, you're talking about first-time women nominee chef winner. I will clear that up. Best Chef Great Lakes went to Sarah Grunenberg of Monteverde, and it was the first time she was nominated and won. Okay. And I think that was a little bit of a surprise, because usually you get nominated a few years in a row and then you win.
Yeah.
And then, as I said, Gaia from Danielle Pastry Chef.
She's amazing. I love her. And oh, my God, huge congratulations to her. She's great. I've worked with her a few times on certain events. She's amazing.
So,
yeah.
I'll have to get.
I'm late on my thank you notes because there's a book tour, but they're coming out.
You'll get it done.
I'll get it done.
And I'm still thinking about the women thing. Women, Food and Wine's best 10 new chefs, they had a few women on it.
Good.
So.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Okay, so we're going to take one more break, come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. And so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Awesome.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Manresa. Here's the rundown. Location, 320 Village Lance in Los Gatos, California. The concept, contemporary American seasonal cuisine. The chef and owner, David Kinch. Why did I go? Because it's been on my list for a while, and I had the perfect opportunity to go between my recent trip from Pebble Beach Food and Wine Festival to Worlds of Flavor in Napa. My experience. I arrived for my 8 p.m. reservation for one and was warmly greeted and seated at an intimate two-top along the banquette with a perfect view of the dining room. Service was personable and top-notch and included meeting Chef Kinch, who came by my table and also gave me a kitchen tour. What did I get? So in lieu of complimentary bubbly, which they sent out, they instead made me two house-made infused spritzers to try. I had the blood orange and the grapefruit, and they were both colorful and very refreshing. I also had ordered some sparkling water and had the tasting menu, which was entitled The Early Spring Garden. It consisted of 14 courses, including artichoke and caviar, asparagus with spot prawn, Creole abalone, spring lamb, morels, and ramps, and rhubarb, salted butter ice cream, and puffed quinoa. My take. Beautiful presentations and delightful flavors. One of my favorite courses was Into the Garden, Green and Bitter. It was served in this black and white plate that had hands on it, so you could actually imagine that they were Chef Kinch's hands in it. It just looked very cool, and then when you broke open, there was an egg, and the yellow dripping of the egg went out all over the place, and it was a very cool presentation. And I took a picture of this on my Instagram if anyone wants to check out at Sherry Bayer. It's there. So the ambiance, modest and contemporary with an open and spacious feel, perfect for a special dining experience. Interesting tidbit, Manresa is one of 6 3-star Michelin restaurants in the San Francisco Bay Area. David Kinch was nominated this year for James Beard Outstanding Chef. He did not get it. It went to Michael Solomonoff, but as we said before, it is a huge honor to be nominated, and he also won Best Chef in Pacific in 2010. Personal fun fact, I met Chef Kinch at South Beach Wine and Food Festival earlier this year, and I was very enthusiastically told him about my upcoming visit, so he was expecting me. The cost. It was the tasting menu is $255, and I had water, so it was a little more than that. It was like $270 plus tax and gratuity, so it was not inexpensive, but it was worth it. Would I go back? Yes. If anyone needs a date, let me know. Website is manresarestaurant.com. Have you been out to Manresa, Barbara?
No, but I love David.
Yeah,
we were in Copenhagen together.
Oh,
for the MAD conference. MAD? That was, he was an amazing guy.
He was so, so nice. Mm. Like, I just enjoyed my time getting to talk with him. Mm. And, yeah, he's had an impressive
career.
He's
an amazing man, and his book is beautiful. I'd love to go out there.
Well, yeah, I have to get the book.
Yeah, oh. This is, like, one of those beautiful food porn books.
Okay, so it's time for the final question. Next week, my guest is Olivia Young. She is a former brand and communications director of Alta Maria Group, which is Michael White's group, and she's the co-founder of Pound for Pound Consulting, and she's the founder of Box and Flow, which is a new fitness studio that is just taken off. So, Barbara, can you ask a question for Olivia? She's done. I mean, this is a guest of mine who's kind of... she's gone, I wouldn't say backwards, but she's still in the hospitality industry as a consultant, uh-huh. But she's now doing, she has a fitness.
So pound for pound, it's a gluten-free, right?
Flour? No, it's just the name of her consulting agency, and she still works with Michael White as a consultant, and I think she's doing some restaurant project.
What
consulting.
Is she, but what does she consult, like, for? I mean, what is consulting?
Consulting as, I think she's working, like, with this Hudson Yards, like, the related. I think she's one of the people who is helping bring in restaurants and chefs and ideas for the concept, like, as an example.
So she started a boxing gym?
So she started a gym. It's called Box and Flow. Mm-hmm. Boxing.
And yoga. Oh, I read about her.
And I've taken it.
Yeah.
And it's quite a workout, and it's a very cool combination. So
cool.
I think we're going to talk about her transition, you know, what it was like. She was with Michael White in-house for about 8 years.
And then, I probably met her. I think I met her.
I'm probably, yeah. Probably,
I used to box.
So. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I used to fight.
I like boxing. Mm. I mean, it's good for that aggression.
And yoga is great, too.
And I do yoga regularly, boxing here and there.
Because you bulk up. Mm-hmm. None of my shirts would fit my arms. But
yeah, she's in great shape.
Oh, she's got to be. I mean, you know, I'd love to... My question is, like, how far does she want to go with that? And then will you design food that you can... design food that could... be amazing to go with your workout. Like, say if you're going to train for a fight, which is hard, especially if you're a chef, because you have to eat correctly, mm-hmm. and lose weight for a fight that's upcoming, but it's really hard. That's why I had to get out of it, because I can't train. I mean, it's not the workout part, it's the eating part and losing weight.
No,
So will she think about designing, you know, takeout meals or any kind of food product, like, online that you can pick up?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because I think you're absolutely right when it comes to working out, mm-hmm. and if you're trying to lose weight, or it's not just about the exercise, it's about what you're putting in your body.
Yeah, and then maybe, you know, workouts at home or workouts while you're traveling, like boxing workouts. On the road.
Boxing on the road.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find a raw boxing gym here, a real one. That's not all men, but, like, ones with, like, old school.
I know we have them in New York.
Yeah.
Her place is yeah, I've taken, it's, it works. I mean, you know, you do the boxing, and then you go into, like, a, it's more of a power yoga, but the combination is good for the body.
Yeah. I used to take Ashtanga yoga, which is very militant, no music, but you show up at Mysore, which is basically they realign you, but it's 6 a.m. every day. It's the same routine.
Yeah.
It's brutal. But it's the best shape I was ever in. That was years ago. And boxing... I used to go to a gym, Peter Welsh gym in Southie, and he did, you know, he trains like Mark Wahlberg and all those guys.
Yeah.
But the throw-up bucket is right next to the ring. That's the kind I like. Not so fancy.
Not so fancy. Okay. Well,
good luck.
People can tune in next week. We're going to talk a lot about Fox and Flow.
I'm going to get in touch with her. I'm so excited for her.
Well, she's really cool, and she's also, I think she's trying to do stuff. Well, she is doing things with chefs. I know Bobby Flay's been there, and I think she's also, trying to do some classes with
the chef industry. Shizitsu too is huge. All the guys in Philly, like Vetri and all those boys, are fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great.
There's a bunch of boxers, yeah.
Yeah. All right, go get them.
That's the show.
Thank
go,
you.
You go get them. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I've gotten to meet you. I met you the other night at Chef's Club, which, by the way, was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
She cooked there for one night. And just getting to know you a little bit in person and reading your book, I'm just impressed and in awe of everything you've done.
Oh, thank you.
So congratulations.
So nice to meet you.
Oh, thank you. And I look forward to what's next, because I know there's something's going to come
next. I have separation anxiety from Brooklyn.
We welcome you to come back anytime.
And Roberta's Pizza. Anytime. God, I loved it here. Thank you.
So my guest today has been Barbara Lynch. She's go ahead.
And Heritage Radio. This is great.
Heritage is, yeah.
It's awesome.
We anytime, come back, see us.
Thank you so much.
So Barbara Lynch is a world-renowned chef and restaurateur from South Boston. She's the founder and CEO of Barbara Lynch Grupo, and has a new memoir out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire. You can follow her on social media at Barbara Lynch, B-O-S, and her website's barbaralynch.com. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are bayerpublicrelations.com and sherrybayer.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks to my engineer, David, today. And thanks to Carrie Bachman, wonderful book publicist, who helped set this up. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next Wednesday with another live show. Hope you'll tune in then. Thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.